Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 83. We are a group of four bubblegum crisis boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey y'all, I'm Mike.
Hello, I'm Nick.
I'm Sam.
And I am tonight's host, Dylan. This episode is being recorded on July 2nd, 2026. Today, we will be discussing all things spring 2026. And with that, Hashin! So, we haven't done a seasonal episode in a while, and that's fine. So we're going to cut in there with a lot of anime season stuff. Probably kind of early, mid, even... won't do any crazy spoilers or anything, but some of the seasons are over or nearly over at this point. And we have a couple of other side topics to discuss. Before we get into the anime stuff, I would like to jump over to Sam, who attended over a month ago. Fanime. He was the only member of the Kenzoku who did attend this year, and so I was looking for any... We were just kind of looking for a rundown or any good, bad, anything that's changed for better, for worse from previous attendances.
I would say that, like, compared to other years, it's kind of the same. Convention-wise, they did make the aisles in Artist Alley wider, which was nice. It didn't ever really feel as cramped as previous years. So, you know, less tables for artists, but more space, which is nice. I did see there was one Japanese guest. The name already escapes me.
Was it Nagahama?
Nagahama, thank you. Yes.
There you go.
Nagahama was there, so
probably patron the most... saint of this podcast.
Yes, yes.
Or at least a Dylan.
Well, no, I don't know. He was apparently did all the Genga for Masaru, so he is, I don't know if proud of it, but like he mentions it with pride at this panel. I actually...
And you probably were the only person that was like, yeah!
Yeah, he actually... So he had... Fanime is one of their traditions, is this thing called Meet the Guests, where one of the days of the con, they give these... The guests of honor have these tickets they can give out to people, and then it gets you a ticket to this event that you can go and sit at tables, and it's kind of like speed dating, where you're sitting at a table with the guest of honor, and you can chat with them for like... 10 minutes and or whatever, and then they swap you to the next table and you talk to the next guest. Like it's pretty fun. It's a really nice thing that they do. But how you get tickets is totally random, because the guests of honor get to decide who to give the tickets to, and how they give them out is completely up to them too. And in Nagahama's panel, he's like, I don't like doing janken. So he just asks random questions. And the first one he asks is, does anybody know what Masaru-san is? So like my hand went up and like two other people, and I thought he was going to ask a question to do with that. He's like, oh, just three of you guys? All right, you guys can have tickets.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So I'm a little surprised there were other people that knew what Masaru-san is. Did they look around our age demographic?
I couldn't tell, because he was giving out other ones afterwards. Like he had six to give out.
Gotcha.
And okay. So like the rest was kind of a madhouse of him, like, asking stuff about Utena or whatever. That's how I knew Mike wasn't at the con, because he wasn't one of the three people. That's why I remember I messaged you guys afterwards, like, oh, Mike, I guess you're not here, huh?
Yeah, let's see. Well, I'm not surprised he responded well from that, just because I have a 14-year-old secondhand story from the AM Squared Spite Con in 2012, when he was a guest, where apparently he was, a friend of the podcast named Evan was in his autograph session, and apparently you know, he was, Nagahama was only supposed to be drawing in black and white and from a very limited menu.
Yes.
And so, yeah, Evan's like, well, I already have Nagahama sketches of all of those shows. Is it okay if I ask him for something different? And he asked for Masaru-san, and Nagahama perked up and was like, didn't know anyone in this country even knew of that, and immediately spent like 15 minutes drawing a color sketch of Masaru-san just so he could keep talking about Masaru-san. So
yeah.
I am not shocked he responded well to that.
Yeah, and this guy also, he loves to draw. His panel was actually really cool. I mean, if you've been to Nagahama panel, he's probably brought up some of these anecdotes before, but he just brought a bunch of like his works and like just kind of like, it was kind of like a, isn't this cool? He was like,
that's so refreshing, because I feel like, you know, I'm not trying to be reductive, but I feel like the people, artists and character designers and animators like him are such a dying breed. Like there's some sort of like anime equivalent of like lost technology that like there's only like a scant handful left still functioning in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy's, and this guy's obviously, he's an old head. He's been around for a long time, and he brought like some books of production. Not when I say production books, I mean like you know, commercially published books that are kind of like these books about the production of things, like Groundworks type books. So he was flipping through them and being like, "Oh yeah, this is cool. Oh yeah, this thing." And then he would relate like an anecdote about something about that. Or like, you know, he had some sheets that were like color tests for an episode of Mushishi, and which is really interesting. I had never even thought of that before, where they're like,
oh, this I is forgot how the... he did Mushishi. Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, me that too.
Super rad. Yeah, that show's had some really cool art assets. So.
Yeah, that was the one that I think everybody was there for. There were way less of us, Utena.
Probably, and, yeah, and... I'm about to say Utena, and then that's about it.
Oh, and Fruits Basket, says he was in on, yeah. on Fruits Basket, too.
He did the original. He worked on some of the original 01 series, yeah.
Yeah, he actually brought his copy of a storyboard, and he like basically flipped through it, and it was kind of like describing the stuff. And he's like, you know, oh, here's this part. Like, I took this out because I thought, you know, I there was dialogue here, and I just exited out because, you know, I thought it would be better if they didn't talk at this part, or like... He's like, I don't remember why I did this thing here. This is like, I made some consequential choice, but I have no idea why. You know, just kind of, it was really interesting because it was kind of intimate in that way that he was just kind of like talking about stuff. One thing he talked about the Utena stuff, which is really cool because he had a bunch of like, because he was a concept designer for Utena, the Utena movie. And he brought a bunch of sheets of like his concept stuff and like mechanical designs. And they were so amazing. It was really incredible. Like, and he was describing, he showed his designs for the vehicles that the Utena and Ansi escape on at the end of the movie. And, you know, he's just describing the thought that went into them and like, hey, look, this is, you know, if you look at it this way, this like resembles like a shoe. And like this thing is, I don't want to just relate all this stuff. One thing that he talked about was the CG in the movie. He said that all the staff like kind of hated it. And they're like, this looks way too much like CG. And Ikuhara is like, yeah, but if we're doing CG, like, don't you think it should look like CG? I don't think that really convinced any of the animators, but like, that was why it looks like it was very intentionally made to stick out. I thought that was interesting. And one other anecdote he had, I don't remember. I thought there was a more really interesting one. But he was also very complimentary of all the people he worked with too, like going through this stuff, which is also cool to see. I mean, I think most anime industry people are like that, where they're very generous with their praise of other people that they've worked with.
Not always, I will say. There are a handful that I worked with who I will not throw under the bus, but that seem to have their egos a little bit more inflated. But in general, I would agree, especially animators and directors are very quick to pass praise to the other people, because they know, and like, especially to make something like a movie or an anime series, like, it's not, no one person carries the load. It is a lot of different people.
Yeah.
So, and it's such a tight-knit industry from, you know, I mean, even now, but especially back then, like, you,
yeah, yeah,
I don't, you hear too many people being that stuck around being like, oh yeah, that guy was a real jerk or anything, because that word spreads and then nobody wants to work with him. So.
Yeah,
unless you're just like unless you're just like an alter and a savant like Miyazaki, where people will, you know, go through searing hot coals to work for him. But like, that's like, you know, the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, truly. I will only, let's see, there was two other things that I remember worth mentioning is that he said he did all the Genga, the keyframes for Masaru, and he did it all with a brush pen, which that
makes sense. That I makes mean, sense. When you look at Masaru's hair alone, it feels like that is kind of warrants it, so it makes a lot of sense.
And, he is like, oh, the person who did all the in-between stuff is, and I should have had her name, but the woman who did the in-between stuff was also, he's like, oh yeah, she's very accomplished now. And yeah, I mentioned that guy likes to draw a lot. He, when I was in the Meet the Guest thing, somebody gave him some comic books because he loves American comic books, and somebody gave him some comic books. And so he just spent the whole time drawing a picture for them as like a thank you.
That's super
of course cool. He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another thing I've heard is he just truly loves to draw. Like, it's not a career for him. It's like literally his life is what I've always heard. So it's cool to see that, you know, that really does translate.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool guy. Anyways, that's my long-winded summary of Fanime and praise of Nagahama.
Quick what a cool question. Guy. Did overall attendance at Fanime seem normal, high, low, and from your perspective?
Seemed normal to me. Didn't feel like super packed. The places I usually hung out, it didn't seem any different, which is, you know, like gaming and Artist Alley. So,
yeah, I guess Fanime is so predominantly like locally kind of, you know, like, it's like such, I would call it like a mid-sized con, but it's still, I would say, predominantly like a California-based con. Like, I don't hear about too many people flying in from all, you know, every which way. Like, it's a, you know, Bay Area has enough of a fan base to sustain Fanime on its own.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel.
The nice thing is that now it is, we get good artists in Artist Alley. Like, there was a time when I myself and friends held a table at Fanime. With our terrible works, and those days are over, and now everybody there is just like amazing, like basically professional fan artists. So,
this is where I pixelate your face, Sam, and pull a couple of those out and say, do you remember these?
Yeah, exactly.
We can film our own otaku no video off of that kind of stuff alone, like all the secret cosplays and all the other stuff done by people within this podcast and friends of.
yeah, it's changed a lot. It's grown up a lot for sure. I like it.
I only asked because for those who are unaware, just this past week was Evolution 2026, which is, for those unfamiliar, like the world's biggest, well, maybe formerly world's biggest fighting game tournament. It still probably is the biggest, but I'm not going to go into the background of it. It's changing from it, but you know, we didn't talk about it, but Sam and I went last year in 2025, and it was big. Like, there was a lot of people there, and like all the games seemed to be very active. Pretty much this year, I don't know if you heard, Sam, but like attendance was pretty much half of last year. And game was anywhere from one half to one third the entries from last year. Like Guilty Gear, I think last year was about 2,500. This year was sub 1,000 entries.
Wow. Was that intentional or?
I think it's a mix of things. I think because, of course, Evo being like the world's biggest fighting game, I think international presence was massively diminished because everything in America super hyperinflated in cost right now. Like when you think about Japanese players having to take the super hyperinflated yen and try to travel to Vegas when everything is half again more expensive. Like I took a good glance at all the hotels and stuff this year. They were on average about $50 to $90 a night more than last year. And then registration was $100 more than last year. Oof. So I mean, when you think about like,
combine that with customs and stuff now.
Yeah, poor exchange rate like JPY. It's like, oh yeah, unless you're hyper serious about it or you actually have a legitimate chance of, you know, placing top eight, like you're gonna be spending a boatload of money. So but I also think a lot of people
combine that with the more EVOs internationally.
Mm-hmm. That's another factor as well. People are like, well, why would I pay thousands of dollars to fly to the hellscape that is Las Vegas when I can instead go to Nice, France, which is like a resort city and have a similar experience? Or go to Tokyo and turn it into a Japan vacation for probably not too much more. Like, so I get the value proposition now. So, well, yeah, it's a little unfortunate because there are definitely some games that I would have liked to go, but just timing didn't work out for me this year. So, and the prohibitive cost kind of made me think twice about it. But I was just curious if it was rippling across other things, because I saw AX's registration got even more expensive again this year, but they're actually still expecting attendance to spike up, which is absurd to me. So,
wow.
Because it is going
on
right now. How can
they have any more people there? Is it?
Yeah.
Is it July 4th weekend?
It is, yep. It is. Mm-hmm. Today is day one. So,
oh boy.
I've heard lines of already, and, you know, heat wave and all, yeah, I'm concerned about people's well-being, but I am not there, so.
I heard something about Macross plus Funko Pops, to the chagrin of Macross fans waiting for, you know, actual Blu-rays.
Yeah, well, good luck getting anything collectible now, because I'm pretty sure attendance at AX more or less matches, like, Comic-Con now, which means if there's something limited you want, good freaking luck getting it.
Ugh, that's wild. Cool, well, we had our Nagahama check in with Nagahama, who I agree from my, what was it, back in 2008 or so, I kind of ended up as his unofficial translator at SakuraCon up in Seattle for the day, because the person who was supposed to be his translator was not very good. And I was just like, I was at a panel and I was just basically just like translating. So, and I kind of ended up following him around, and I agree. He's a very cool guy, super nice guy. So good to see that he's still the same person, which is lovely.
So Sam, without Dylan there, was there anyone to stand Jubei-chan to?
Oh, actually, no, I don't think I forgot about that show too.
Yeah, there's another lovely, very well done show from the
lovely, nice show,
early,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like early 2000s. That was just like looks so good.
Nagahama and Daichi like team up, they do some pretty awesome work together.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're just like one of those pairs of people that are just like, oh, this is gonna be great. Coming back to spring, because you did see it. My schedule ended up not working. Did anybody get out to the Utena movie theatrical release?
No.
Oh, man.
Sadly, no.
bad bummer. Story. I bought a ticket, but then I forgot day of that I bought a ticket. I was going to go, so I feel really bad about that. But, you know, I supported it.
It's the worst. I hate it when I do that. I've done that a few times, and every time I'm like, I'm terrible at being a person now. Okay. Well, we didn't make it there. I hope some of our many thousands and tens of thousands of listeners went and saw it, so that'll be good.
I will say on Anime Movie Horizon, I don't know if this episode probably won't be out in time, or maybe it will, the Ava movies in theaters end of this month, 21st, 22nd. Yes. I bought tickets for that, and I put it on my calendar, so I won't forget this time.
So yeah, I need to get the tickets.
Same.
Yeah, I'm curious, because I don't really watch Death that much, so.
Yeah. Same.
Okay, so let's get into some anime seasonal stuff here. If you follow along, I do my very quick anime reviews, and then I went back through and kind of took a relook at some of the stuff that I said, this is probably worth finishing the episode. My ratings go from basically like, this is awesome, down to I'd rather watch Alhazard 2. and everything in between. So I'll just kind of start off with one or so of the shows that I watched and I thought they were good, because I'd rather discuss things that are good rather than things that are not good. Actually, it wasn't one that I shared on my list, but I do have it here as one that was surprisingly good, is the Rilakkuma series, which is just based on like the little mascot character. And they're these little 3-minute episodes. I thought it was going to be some continuing thing, but it's not. It's just a standalone thing of these little like three minute episodes done by Production IG.
What?
And it was just like super nice, relaxing about a bear that kind of goes on a dream adventure, and it has a really catchy end song.
It's a portmanteau of relax and kuma, so it's a relax kuma.
Yes.
Yeah.
Got it. Yes. Relax kuma. Yes. So it was a very weird one. I was assuming it was going to be like some sort of like kids show or something that's been running for 50 years, but it's like, no, they just like made some little thing, probably co-paid for by the Rilakkuma
group,
society, whatever, to sell Rilakkuma merchandise. But hey, Rilakkuma, I don't care.
Heavy Industries, probably.
Yeah, Rilakkuma Heavy Industries. So that was one of the ones that I was like, you know what? That was actually like way better than I thought it should have been. That's an aside there. For one of the other ones that I think was on the list of stuff that we can discuss here is Liar Game.
Oh, yeah.
This one was highly hyped up by the Kenzokis. We've all been looking forward to, because they've needed a good kind of a death game show. Felt like it'd been a little bit. I've watched through episode 9 or so, which means that it's kept my interest.
I'm 2 episodes in, I think, so.
So I'll go with some of my thoughts, which is, I think it's pretty good. It's not my favorite death game show. It's more of a kind of a betting game type one.
It's more of a gamble survivor than like a true death game. It's more like a Kakegurui, yeah, or a Kaiji, with even lower stakes, in my opinion, because the stakes are just debt, which is like, yeah, it sucks, but, and it's highly relatable to the current generation for sure, but at the same time it's kind of like, well, compared to like, you know, traversing an I-beam spread across two skyscrapers and then people like trying to have you fall to your death, doesn't quite hit the same. Like, I do agree, I do enjoy it, but it's okay, honestly, in my opinion. If it wasn't the only kind of like gamble survivor, you know, style series in the last, gosh, probably 2-3 years, I think, what's the last one? Well, actually, Shibo Yugi was kind of a darling for me last year, but we didn't really get to talk about that one. But
I go back to like Tomodachi Game, but that wasn't, yeah, but that one, you know, again, that wasn't like a gamble survivor. That was more like
a true survivor. It's kind of like a backstabbing kind of style game. But yeah, I mean, that one was like, what, 2022?
Something like that. It was a while ago.
So yeah, I like it. Like, again, it's interesting. Feels, I don't know, as deep as I am in now, I feel kind of like sunk cost on it, because honestly, it's feeling a little samey at the point I'm at. But at this, I don't want to ruin it for you. It's worth watching. Like, it's definitely got some interesting stuff, and there's definitely one particular character that made me WTF pretty hard for a specific reason, and I will not spoil that. But I think Dylan probably has an idea. But yeah, it was just kind of like completely unnecessary as far as how they spun this character, but they leaned hard into him. Like, okay, that's cool, I guess. So
I was actually like semi excited for this, not really excited, but like interested, because the manga is from the early 2000s that this is based on, and they actually made a live action TV series in the mid 2000s, I want to say. What is it? Let's
that,
see. Yeah,
that makes sense, because I feel like this one really is so like grounded in reality that it totally would be a better like real life drama, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was kind of, when I saw the TV series, I was like sad that they didn't make it an anime, and so it's interesting that they're deciding to do that now. I'm not sure why, but that would be interesting. that kind of behind the scenes decision would be, yeah, interesting to know.
It's always weird to see when they like readapt something that's an older manga that's not something that's like a super popular or, you know, crazy well-known thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe it was in someone's back pocket for a while and they found the right financing. And
yeah. Yeah. It could be that there was somebody who, yeah, really has been trying to get this made for a while. And yeah, finally the stars aligned with money.
That is kind of one of the tangible benefits of just everything being animated now, is we get some of these, you know, kind of lost gems from yesteryear. Like, again, never in a thousand years would I thought Siren would be greenlit for anime.
Oh yeah,
20 years or whatever after the manga. I'm like super hyped for that. So
yeah.
So
Black Torch is another one that's this season that was should have been done a while ago. I mean, that's more recent than Siren, but it's still like, wow, it took so long.
Okay. Anything else on Liar Game?
Nope.
I had it in one of my betters, but I kind of had like tier one and tier two for the better shows, and I had that one in a tier two show, and sounds like Nick's in agreement with that.
Yeah, I've built my own kind of mini tier list from Spring, so
yeah. I'll go with my other kind of tier two show, which is Snowball Earth. I know this one's based on a manga, it's a newer one. But I thought it was pretty cool, actually. I think I'm through episode 5 or so, and it definitely has a lot of the stuff that I like about it. Is it starts off with like super vibes of like 90s OVA type setup, and then it moves forward almost into more of a Kaiju Number 9 kind of thing. But there's definitely, you get huge Gunbuster setup vibes.
The key art gives me big Gunbuster vibes.
Yeah, it's definitely clear that the people that did it, like, they knew and were aware of that. They were like, yeah, we're totally leaning into this part.
I mean, if you're gonna copy something, you might as well copy the best. Yeah. So
So that's the stuff that I think is pretty cool. The world's interesting, and I think the characters are pretty good. The main character is one of those clueless guys who's trying to make friends, and he's doing it out where he has this book of how to make friends, but it's in a world where there is an alien invasion, and he gets sent to space and comes back and finds the world frozen over completely like 10 years later.
10 years later?
That's and it? Yeah, not very long. Exactly. So you're like, okay, what the heck is going on? And then they go over the, you know, expand stuff as time goes on. He finds some people, but he's always like trying to make friends because he never really had friends before except for his robot. So it kind of has... Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, but it's done in kind of a charming way. So I like it. It definitely has a lot of 3D stuff where the robot and the monsters and a lot of even the characters are done using like 3D model stuff.
Mm.
And my opinion is, I think overall, it looks pretty good. Like, it doesn't, is it cinema quality? No, but it's good for TV quality. It's not, okay. It's one of those things I can completely understand why they did it that way. I could also see someone watching it being like, ugh, I'm out because it looks like this a little bit.
Yeah, I want to check that show out. It if the show's good enough, you know, the CG doesn't matter as much. But if the show is not good, the usual thing of you got the pillars, and you got to have enough pillars there for the show to be watchable.
Yeah, mean, it, once in a while, a singular pillar is just so pronounced that it can overcome. But yeah, usually it needs at least a couple, otherwise it's tough to justify in this era of, again, you just doom scroll for 3 seconds and can find something that at least is maybe worth an epic watch before you make pass judgment on it.
Yep.
Yeah. Didn't you see any of this show or not?
I did not.
No.
All right. No problem. But I still think it's decent. Is it gonna change your life? No, but it's a decent show.
Well, I think I have something that it could warrant having its own podcast episode dedicated to it. This probably right now is my favorite show of 2026, and it came out of nowhere for me. Oh. And this is my only S+ tier from spring. And spring had a lot I liked in it. But
say the words. I'm pretty sure I know what it is.
It is. It's Nippon Sangoku.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? That was not the one I was expecting.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody else has watched any of it.
No.
This is absolute seinen masterpiece, like Urasawa, 20th Century Boy, monster level, in my opinion. Like I'm only 3 eps in, and I am so locked in on this show. It is really cool, and I love the art style. It does use CG, so it's done by Studio Kafka, which is the same studio that did the Chainsaw Man authors 17 to 23.
Oh, okay.
That miniseries. Yeah.
The Tatsuki.
Tatsuki Fujimoto. Or... 17 to 23 or 26, whatever. It's the same studio that. So if you dug that animation style, it's the same studio. Also music done by Kevin Penkin, who is definitely a big favorite of mine. Yeah. Plot wise, it's basically a really cool alternate near future Japan, where basically their Japan's kind of continuing its current trajectory in the world stage, and then suddenly there is I'm literally spoiling the first 30 seconds, which is just literally a 30 second monologue of from the show. So basically, there's nuclear war occurs again, Japan stays agnostic in this conflict, which shouldn't surprise anybody, but as an aftermath effect, there's a lot of refugees that end up overfilling Japan, and suddenly a very bad epidemic basically wipes out 90% of Japan's population, and it regresses It regresses heavily back to Meiji era sensibilities and technology. So, and basically it becomes fragmented into three, the government's overthrown and gets fragmented into three kind of air quotes, kingdoms. That's hence the Sangoku. And it takes place there, and that's all. But yeah, unfortunately it's on Prime. Is the sad part. Because Amazon MGM basically funded it. But it uses CG in ways that make sense. Let's call it cuts and art styles that are intended to be look kind of, more esoteric and out there. Otherwise, I would say it looks pretty solid. I adore the art style. It's military drama, but it's done so well. It's going to take a lot to dethrone this for me this year, and that's saying a lot because I like a lot from spring. But this is my only true S plus tier, period. Like nothing else is hits the and again, I'm not even done with the first season yet. I'm only like 4 eps in, but I am sold on it.
Oh, there's more.
Well, season 1 just finished, so I don't know if there's going to be more, but there's definitely more manga. If they don't animate more of it, I'm definitely going to keep reading it, because it's, it looks really cool, and, did not expect something like this to come out of nowhere. Like, I didn't really see any advertising for it. I just kind of saw it, and I'm like, hey, this has some cool key art, and then I saw ep 1, and it just completely dug its claws into me, and it was over.
I'll be honest, I saw the title, and I am allergic to anything Three Kingdoms related.
Yeah, I understand that.
So I'm glad you watched it, and then you can tell me to watch it. So,
but Dylan, did you with given your reaction, did you watch this one?
I did. I watched. I had it on my finish episode ranking with. Because it definitely had some cool stuff there. Then I went back and finished the first episode. I definitely agree. It has really cool, like, visual and directional art style. I think it looks really good. I feel like there's, like, some of this kind of intentional, like, I want to say, like, rotoscoping type stuff. But it, like, it looks good and it's very cool looking. The problem I had with it after I finished episode 1 was, oh my gosh, just so brutal and dark.
And again, this is definitely a seinen, like heavy seinen intended thing.
The first episode, I was like, I finished it and I was like, okay, it was very well done and everything, but for me, I'm just like, I don't need this right now.
It is, yeah. I would say it's the brutality of Ep 1 is on par with like a Takopi incident, I would say it's on that tier. Yeah. But
yeah, it was.
It definitely isn't like misery for the sake of misery. It definitely is a purpose and is kind of the main reason why the main character now is doing what he's doing for the rest of it. So I will say doesn't sustain that level of abject misery throughout. At least the next few episodes, it does calm down in the next episodes for sure.
Okay, all right. Maybe I'll go back to it. But yeah, definitely, it looked cool, and I think I was just like, I don't need something this dark and intense right now. Like, I got enough things in my life.
Totally. I mean, again, we know what appeals to me, and it's not the light stuff. So
nope.
That being said, yeah, it's absolutely at least worth an Ep 1 watch, especially all the way through Ep 1, because there's like a mini epilogue at the end of it, and that kind of gives you an idea of the direction of the rest of the show. And if that looks like something you're into, then yeah, like, you know, I love Japanese historical stuff in anime, and this is like an awesome attempt at kind of doing like alternate future post-apocalypse with, you know, in the Reiwa era, as they call it. So it's a really cool, interesting take. It feels like very much like an Urasawa style story with a bit more brutality. Urasawa typically isn't super brutal, but I would say definitely worth an Ep 1 watch. It comes with my highest recommendation. I would say this is pretty easily my favorite show of this year so far.
We'll check it out for sure.
That being said, plenty other stuff I truly like. I think Dylan and I definitely align on a fair amount of it. There's definitely one show in your tier 1 list that I absolutely agree with. So,
all right, let's see. I've got a couple more here, but I'll pass it off to see, Mike. Anything that you've checked out that you would like to share on?
Honestly, I just really have not been doing much seasonal, though I was watching a whole ton of not necessarily anime, but animated movies at the Palm, so everything from Angel's Egg and Akira and Perfect Blue again.
Oh, man.
So that was a solid May just with those three. And then throw in Wizards, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Black Cauldron, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Heavy Metal. And yeah, May was a little busy with animation, just not anime as much.
Oh, I mean, that's good. Still serving the cause.
All right. I'll let Sam, if you have one that you want to
So I will just use maybe my first turn here to just say I actually haven't watched a lot of stuff from Spring because we've been watching, catching up on older stuff. I don't remember if we've, so there are some series we watched that I wouldn't consider like great shows, but we've just been kind of watching them. And so we've continuing to watch them. One of them is Descendants of a Bookworm, and which I've talked about before on this podcast. And then Mairi Mashita Iruma-kun, and that's also another. That one's like more like a. They're both kind of like kids-ish shows. I can't say I recommend them. The other one that we actually got into late, that has been like we have actually been watching like tons of these episodes, which is why we haven't watched much else, is Apothecary Diaries. I don't know if I mentioned that on the podcast before, but it's so good. I can't believe I hadn't seen this sooner. Highly recommend people watch that.
I think we both got sucked in there on a return flight on JAL because they had like the first 12 episodes streaming. And I think us or us and our significant others literally watched the entire 12 episodes they had there as part of the flight. And we're like, do you have any more? I could sure use some more right now. I'd be happy to do an ep on this show. I don't think we really have to here, but it is a show that has everything is like B level. Honestly, I'd be probably be like, it's about B level, but the writing is S tier. It is so well written that
it is extremely well
everything written. Else can be okay, and it's still S tier.
Yeah, I mean the animation is B level at least. Like it's a solid B level animation wise.
No, I'm not trying to say like, oh, it looks bad or anything. Like everything is very consistently clean done, but it's not a show that wins you over in the animation department.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those ones where I have many, many friends and colleagues, like work colleagues who are not big time anime people, and they're all like, oh my god, how come you haven't watched Apothecary Diaries? And I frankly don't have a good answer. I fully intend to still. I keep hearing great things about it. The art looks cool. Like, I love the key art. So,
I mean, I'm sure, to be honest, it looks
easy to get into.
It looks uninteresting. Like, literally, I've seen pictures of it before, and I was like, it didn't look interesting at all. Like, I just have no interest in like the Chinese historic stuff.
See, it's the opposite for me because I was in the last, that's probably the stuff I've gotten really into in the last 5-ish years for various private reasons. So that's why I'm particularly interested to see the anime take on it, because there kind of was a period where there was some anime stuff about it, but it was almost like these, very, very like old, what's the word I'm looking for, like folklore things like Sayuki, right, like the Monkey King, like all these ancient tales, and it's like everybody knows, you know, that but kind of, you know, something more set in the period and isn't meant to be inspired by by folklore, I feel like, you know, it hasn't been done a ton. So that's of course what I'm assuming it's about. I actually have no idea because I only have seen key art. So.
Yeah, it looks like literally nothing. Like, it's, like if I wasn't forced to watch the first episode, I never would have watched it. So which is probably why, people being first introduced to it on a plane where you're kind of a captive audience and there's, you know, a lot of time.
Yeah, you got 13 hours coming back. Might as well give it an episode and then you're hooked. All right. Coming back into the spring here, I'll go with one of my next ones. I'm gonna keep it classic here and go with Mao, the new Takahashi show. I think I was very pleasantly surprised by it. It's definitely more on the Inuyasha kind of setup for it, where it's a girl who's in high school and she goes through a Shotengai gate and gets transported back to Taisho era. And then meets Mao, who's a person there who's got special abilities and a sword and a curse.
Of course,
a sword. yep. And travels back and forth. So in some ways, it's like, okay, well, it's another, a different take of thing on Inuyasha, kind of that similar setup. The main voice actor for Mao is not Yamaguchi Kappe, so that's strange. but I think it's just, and I was also super surprised that it was Sunrise did the animation. I was just not expecting that. But I think it's just one that's just done very solidly. Like, everything about it is just good. I think it's got, you know, standard, really good, fun, interesting Takahashi characters. I think it's really cool that it goes back to Taisho era, so it's recognizably soon, like soon, recent enough, but not so recent that you know everything. So it's kind of ends up being this interesting alternate history show. And it's, is there anything that's like so crazy good about it that you're losing your mind? No, but you know what? It's a solid show. It's just,
I feel like
it's good.
That's what Takahashi stuff's supposed to be, though. It's never supposed to blow your mind. It's supposed to be a very consistent, comforting experience, kind of like on a cold day when you have like that, you know, warm mug of tea or coffee. Like, that's the kind of feeling I get watching good Takahashi stuff. And
I agree.
I have not gotten to it. The correct informant, it's on Hulu, correct?
Yes,
yeah,
it is
so
on Hulu.
It's kind of on a weird platform compared to, I'd say, the norm, air quotes. But yeah, I'll definitely get to it. It's funny because I've fallen way off the Takahashi wagon for the last, let's call it, decade, because I never even finished reading Rinne. And then, I didn't even start Mao. So, because Mao is still going, as far as I'm aware. The manga is still serialized,
I think,
I don't think it's done yet.
So if you just want, like, a nice, you know, dinner time show or something there, like, I think I definitely recommend it. It's a solid show. It's got a really catchy intro sound effect thing at the beginning of the opening of the episode, like the opening song, is like this really catchy kind of thing that gets you in the mood for it. So that's when I was very pleasantly surprised with just solid Takahashi, which is great. I've got three others that are on my good list, but I can keep going, or I can stop if someone wants to mention something else.
Well, I want to take a little bit of time to go over Akane Banashi, because we both have that on the tier one.
Go.
And man, yeah, this before I watched Ippon Sangoku, this was way up there for me. Such a cool premise, great voice acting. Like, the voice acting is what carries this one, plain and simple.
It's gotta be good, right? Like,
it has to be, because for those unaware of the premise, it's basically a shonen series about the Japanese performance art of rakugo, which is like, for the easiest way to describe it, is like old form Japanese like stand-up comedy. It's basically a storytelling format that's supposed to be comedic. And you're like, literally, you're just a lone person sitting in front of an audience, and you're basically you're telling a story and portraying multiple characters. And so your ability to basically stage act and, like, you know, portray multiple people as a one person is kind of what dictates your skill, as a rakugoka. And there's multiple levels to it, and I won't go too deep in the plot, but basically the main character, her whole goal is to become an awesome one, because her dad kind of like got screwed in his career, and she, you know, worshipped her dad. And so it's a very shonen manga process. Like, there's definitely rivals, and there's definitely like arcs and training, and so to speak, but it's on a topic that has never been done before and so few people know about. So in my opinion, this
really
is probably going
to
be
do.
It is. It kind of is kind of like breaking the mold as far as like what can be considered a shonen manga, kind of like what Death Note did back when it, you know, did its thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, It's really, really cool. Animated very solidly, voice acted absolutely god tier SSS plus voice acting. Like, there's a couple of YouTube videos of the main character of Akana's voice actress like practicing doing Rakugo, because obviously she has to do it in the studio. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting, and like, oh man, that's you can see the labor of love this show is for the voice actors, because again, without them being able to sell the performances, the show falls mm-hmm. apart. So super cool topic, easy to watch, solidly animated. So yeah, easy recommend if you want kind of like a tropey, like let's call it predictable show, but on a completely new topic, so you actually get to learn stuff. Comes with a high recommendation from me for sure.
Agreed there. Yeah, it definitely has. I take it as like one of those cool sports anime where I learn about a sport and the details of it, of a thing that I was like, well, I've kind of heard of this thing, I don't really know much about it, and then I'm like, oh man, now I want to go next time to Japan, I want to go see a Rakugo show, like, because I'm like all into it now.
I think it's Shibuya Rakugo. There's a theater in Shibuya, and they actually put out a podcast of their performances. I used to listen to it as a regular thing for a while. So if you want to check it out, I think it's Shibuya Rakugo. I have to look that up to make sure. But yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of dying, right? Isn't it?
It is definitely a dying art form. I mean, I feel like everything old classical Japan is kind of a dying art form, though. So,
well, except for sumo, to be reductive. Seems to be doing too well.
Sumo is kind of going through, but that's because there's a big surge of international like participants, like that Ukrainian guy who's, you know, become a fan favorite because he was originally like a refugee, and then he suddenly took to sumo, and now he's like fastly becoming one of the most popular. But yeah, besides sumo, I would say a lot of traditional Japanese forms are definitely, I mean, that's, I think it just correlates with Japanese population decline as well. So,
yeah, so I agree with everything that Nick said there. Really, really cool show there. I started reading the manga of it when it was first started, and I just didn't quite get into it. But the anime, I'm into it. It's really cool. Another note on that one, I think it's up on Netflix now, but the primary broadcast is YouTube.
Yeah, that was the weird thing. Like, it was actually up on YouTube months before it got onto Netflix. Yeah, like literally months. Like, Ep 1 was actually, I had to dig, but yeah, Ep 1 was viewable back in like April or something.
Like, yeah, basically like simultaneous stuff. But yeah, YouTube is the primary viewing channel for that. So
still
it is on Netflix now, though, so
I haven't watched the Netflix version. I don't know if they have the same or different subtitle track or anything there.
I assume it's different, but I haven't probably watched both, so
yeah.
But yeah, man, the art from the manga is just like amazing, like some of the best like Shonen Jump manga art I've seen in a while. Kind of gives me vibes of like a series of the content doesn't almost air quotes deserve this quality of art. It reminds me of Yakitate Japan. Like, as dumb of a series that was, it had some phenomenal art. I'm not saying this is a dumb series, but just kind of feels like, you typically, if it's about something that's not super action heavy, then you don't necessarily have to have, you know, super detailed art, but like all the covers for the tankobon are freaking amazing. So
yeah, so that one's definitely a recommend. All right, what do we got here? All right, I've got two more that I think are cool shows. I'm gonna go with the ridiculous one of My Ridiculous Reincarnation.
You're gonna have to really sell this one on me, man.
So this is one that I had my initial review rating was meh, but I was kind of like, you know what? I'm kind of curious a little bit. So I went back and watched more. So the premise is that the main guy gets into a reincarnation loop with a goddess, and that he's like, oh, well, I want to be Kirito. Like, he literally says, I want to be Kirito. And she's, the goddess is like, okay, that's fine. You can do that. But there's a 50,000 year waiting list for that. He's like, okay, well, what you got? Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's like, well, what you got? And then she's like, well, you can be the hero's rib. And he's like, can I get any, like, modifiers on that? And then she's like, all right, sure. And then, like, goes, hits the button, he gets sent off, and then he basically immediately comes back, and she plugs the thing into him and gives the download of how he, like, basically got the hero killed. And each episode is two of these things. It's way better done than it should be. It has a lot of really cool animation, different animation techniques. Like, each of, like, the replays that it does is done in a different style, where some of them are literally done with, like, claymation and paper cutouts and ridiculous live action filming.
I get it. It's literally, like, tongue-in-cheek and heavily spoofing the already overdone reincarnation genre.
Yes. Got it. I'm very not surprised that the people made it saw, like, the, so I've been reincarnated as a vending machine, and they're like, okay, we're done with this. We have to do something that's ridiculous. It's pretty darn funny, and it's really cool. The ending for the episodes, and, like, the end sequence, they show some of, like, the little bit of, like, the behind the scenes of, like, how they're, like, animating and making all of these different segments and stuff. And you're like, what? That's so cool. Like, you guys actually, like, are doing, like, you can see them sitting there, like, doing, like, the claymation moving and, like, taking the pictures or, like, moving these cutouts and stuff. So that's why I say it's definitely a stupid jork show. And I think it commits to it fully and is way more fun than it should be.
Oh, okay, well,
call me impressed, huh? And here I thought I was just gonna be like, yeah, eyes roll out of my skull. But
oh yeah, I agree. I went in, I saw the title, and I was like, oh god, this is not gonna be a thing for me. But I was definitely glad I came back on that one. And then my last one that is a tier one is Go For It Nakamura, or, you know, Ganbare Nakamura-kun. It is a high school kind of romance, teenage romance-y show. Here's the things it's got going for it. It's interesting in that the main character is an introverted gay guy in high school, and he has a crush on another guy. And with the art and design styles and stuff, I get big vibes of Kimagure Orange Road, and, like, Here Is Greenwood.
Art, the key art screams like late 90s or late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
The immediate vibe I got from this was like, huh, this looks like a male Comey can't communicate. Is kind of the vibe I got.
No, it's, but I think it's more charming. Mm. I think it's a little better than Komi Show or whatever.
What? Better?
I think so. That show kind of,
fighting words.
I don't know. That show was fun, and then I kind of lost a little bit. This way, it's not the same as Komi Show. Let's just put it aside.
Sure. Okay. This was just my, PR bias that I was, you know, making up in my head.
So, yeah, it definitely has those vibes in, like, the best way. The art is very nice and consistently done in that style. The endings are, for each episode, are really cool in that they actually have different art for it taken from something that's, like, happening. Like, one of them, they're riding in a car, and it's just kind of like this very, like, chill, car ride, but you just kind of like see it in the background there as they're going. I'm not describing it well, but it looks really nice. It's got that good, charming, awkward, romantic comedy, you know, very well executed. So it was another one that I was very pleasantly surprised on. It's, you know, the main character is likable and funny and a complete dork who's just spaces out all the time and has all his imaginations of his crush and how they're going to be best friends forever. And it's a really nice, charming, silly show that you could watch if you needed to have something lighter weight than Nippon Sankoku. But that's one I would definitely recommend as well for a similar thing there. And it's really nicely done, and it's a fun innocent romantic comedy show that's very well done.
All right, yeah, we could definitely use more of those.
Yeah, I saw that one and it looked pretty, but the content just looked very like just another high school romance thing, and I didn't, other than, you know, it being a gay romance, I didn't see enough to distinguish it. So a recommendation will go a long way towards getting me to push me over the edge to check it out.
Yep. And it's my stuff. I do watch, you know, my 5 to 10 minutes of all the trash, and some of them I went back through and finished episodes on, and I was like, I'm out on this one. So that's my good of the stuff that I think I liked and some others liked from the spring. We are close to the end of time here. Is there anything else anyone wanted to bring up for anything else?
I have two quick ones. One, I think you didn't really care for this one as much, but I've been watching Witch Hat Atelier. And that show is awesome, I think.
I only watched Ep 1 because insistence isn't the right word, but I was like, this show has a character that all my friends seem to be losing their mind over. I'm like, oh, got it. So there's a Fujoshi Bait character. Okay, let's take a look. And then, like, within 5 seconds, I'm like, ah, there he is.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's two. There's two that make a good pair. The world building is just so good. That's like two things it's got going for it, is incredible world building and amazing animation. The animation is so good.
It is animated very well.
Yeah. It's those two things. Like, I think, Dylan, your comment was like it didn't really grab you or whatever. It wasn't that. It was kind of boring. And I could see that. But if you enjoy world building, it's really good for that. They've developed this whole world with a magic system and the society with, you know, all these different roles, and it really well thought out. It's based on a manga. Highly recommend. The last one is kind of a whatever, but it's fun. Is Smoking Behind the Supermarket with You?
Yeah,
15 minute episodes.
It's technically summer, though, I believe, not spring, but yeah, I have been watching.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it just started. It's kind of a weird like seasonal one, because it started a little bit before summer formally did, but yeah, I love that one.
Oh, is that why? Because there isn't a bunch of episodes out.
Yeah. But yeah, I love that one, too.
That's, it's got 12 eps out. Well, anyways, it's good. I recommend it. Yeah, it's fun. It's exactly what the title says. It's a kind of a romance thing where they smoke behind the supermarket.
Yeah, it's old millennial man bait, whatever Japanese word you want to use for that is. But yeah, main characters literally are our demographic. So
yeah, so that's all I've watched. That's the entirety of everything.
The only other thing I'll even just briefly mention, and I don't even think it needs much any advertising, because the entire planet is probably watching it, is Yomi no Tsugai, which is the new Hiromu Arakawa, Full Metal Alchemist creator show.
Oh, yeah.
That one, look at the key art. What you see is what you get. If you think the key art looks cool, then give it a watch. Otherwise, it does not surprise you. But I'm not trying to, say, downplay it. It's animated insanely well. Bones are showing up for this one, for sure. Now that they're done with My Hero. But, yeah, it's fine. It doesn't feel... My issue with Arakawa was I feel like after FMA, she hasn't really, like, she's played it safe, and this continues to feel that way. Like, nothing about the series, like, surprises me at all. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I pretty much am predicting, like, you know, every step of the way. That doesn't mean it's bad, but it just doesn't, like, excite me.
But when your first work is such a huge hit, like, it's such a masterwork.
When it's viewed as a criterion, like how many people say, "Oh, this is the greatest thing ever made," and it's like, "Wow!" When that's your first major work, yeah, that's a mighty tall hill to climb, and most people never recover from it. But it's fine. If you enjoyed FMA, give this a watch. It's again animated well, but yeah, it's not anything revolutionary like Nippon Sangoku or anything like that, but it's okay.
It's also the Demons of the Shadow Realm stream. Bunch of places.
The most mundane English title ever.
Yeah. I think that's kind of my summary as my re-review is like, you know, I watched the first few episodes, you know, it's kind of a cool mixing of stuff like. It's fun, but nothing particularly made me say, oh man, I gotta watch the next episode. I was like, so I probably won't. Like, it's fine. It looks nice. Yep. So, anything else from anyone? I'll give my last thoughts. Another one. Aaron the Southpaw. I tried going through that show because it's kind of cool about like graffiti art stuff, but man, the main character was so insufferable. I just bailed in the middle of like the third episode. I couldn't even do it. He was just such a turd, such a high school turd. I couldn't handle him.
It didn't look like baseball, so I was like, well, that feels like I'm in for disappointment. So why would I watch?
No, it's graffiti art stuff, which is a cool premise. But
that is not what I get from the key art. Well, at least one of the key arts. There's two. One that looks like somebody spray painting, and the other, which is just five. It looks like an advertisement for like clothing or something.
yeah, it does.
So with that, I will say thank you for listening. And until next time, this is Amo Kenzuku saying Saraba.